Ed saw a rush of movement bouldering toward him, a heavy club hefted above a scaly gray head, and his body reacted before his mind could. He lifted his longsword, both hands above his left shoulder and the steel tip aimed chest high, as he took a heavy step forward and readied his knees. The impact surprised him as much as it did the creature. He felt resistance as his steel encountered flesh, and then there was wet, sickening pressure as the sword bit past skin and muscle. Ed found himself face to face with a very confused, bald humanoid creature with a head like a huge battered potato. Only uglier. It had flat, rotten teeth and tiny eyes almost hidden by an overgrown forehead. Ogre, Ed's brain helpfully provided instead of something less useful, like a battle plan. Both Ogre and Dungeon Lord examined the foot of steel protruding from the ogre's belly. Ed had aimed as high as his own chest, which meant... With a furious, pained grunt, the ogre rose to his full height, two heads taller than Ed, with foam bubbling from his oversized mouth. With one burly hand, the creature raised his club again, and with the other, he reached for Ed's sword. The Dungeon Lord reacted, once again, with training honed into instinct through sheer repetition. He pulled back with all his strength, ripping his blade out of the body with a burst of blood and steaming meat, then used the motion to power a downward slash that stamped a terrible wound into the ogre's shoulder, right next to its neck. A fountain of blood sprayed upward, then the ogre's club thundered against Ed's side and crashed him into the ground like a rag doll. There was a flash of light. Ed sprang to his feet, still holding his sword. "That hit just broke all your ribs," he told himself. "Probably also collapsed a lung." He wondered if Andrina's herbs could heal one of those. He took a deep breath and regained his stance. Strangely enough, he could breathe just fine. More than that, unless the adrenaline was masking his wounds, he was barely bruised at all. Right. Magic armor. It seemed like the pledge of armor talent was worth its weight in gold. The ogre wasn't faring as well. He was holding his innards in with one hand, and his other arm was slick with blood pouring from the wound on his shoulder. Since nothing was charging at him at the moment, Ed took a chance to gaze at the chamber he was within. He saw an uneven, obsidian-like floor with stalagmites growing several feet upward. Five more ogres were frozen in surprise around a shoddy camp built out of rocks and twigs, with their even shoddier weapons laying next to them. All wore dirty loincloths, but the females had tits like huge, hairy tents of skin flapping down to their bellies, which Ed was sure was a sight that would come back to haunt him as soon as he tried to sleep. He glanced back at the ogre that had attacked him. He was probably a sentinel, left to guard the portal's entrance. The Dungeon Lord smiled.
"I don't know if you can understand me, but I'm giving you one last chance to surrender."
Then the portal behind him flared to life with several bursts of sulfur and red light, and many things happened at once, the end result of which was several dead ogres. A dozen magical purple crows flapped over the ogres' heads, pecking at them as Alder's magical clones ran around looking confused. The horned spiders surrounded Ed while Kes sprang next to his side and thrust the tip of her sword into the wounded ogre's eye without saying a word. Fleck and his riders charged through the ogre's midst while they were distracted by the illusions and the crows, and webbed their weapons away from their reach right as Kaga and his monster hunters rushed into the fray and slashed at necks and tendons with their scimitars, cackling like madmen as they went through their bloody work. It was a massacre. Only one lonely ogre reacted fast enough to do anything at all, and she ran away through a shadowy exit with a broken door laying at one side. A burst of thick mist snaked through the air after her. Both were out of view when the ogre's screaming began, and then ended. Ed and his minions stared at each other through ragged breaths. Ed realized everyone there was as surprised as he was. The battle hadn't even lasted half a minute. He had lacked the time to activate his improved reflexes or think about casting a spell. Hell, to think of it, If it weren't for Kes's training, the ogre would have clonked him on the head and probably permanently wounded him before anyone had time to help. It was a sobering idea, and a great motivation to not slack off during the next sparring session. Kes shuffled next to him, her sword still at the ready.
"Told you I'd be right behind you," she said.
Ed nodded. "You stole my kill, though."
"Ah, I'm sure there's a wraith somewhere for you to attempt to solo."
Behind him, Kes's new recruits shuffled forward, their spears shaking in their hands. They looked incredibly out of place in the middle of the carnage. One of them poked at Ed's dead ogre with her spear, seemingly disappointed. After them came Levy and Alder.
"What were those things?" Alder asked. "I didn't even have time to study their character sheets."
"Ogres," Ed said. It was strange to know something about Ivalice that the bard didn't. A few dungeon lords use them in Ivalice Online. At higher levels, they can cast spells and wear armor. These had weapons fashioned out of bone and rotten wood, though. They don't strike me as minions of anyone.
"So much for we'll be perfectly safe," Levy muttered.
She smoothed a non-existent crease in her dress.
"At least you had me backing everyone up. Where's Yarlin, by the way?"
The vampire returned through the exit where the ogre in the mist had left. Her burial dress was slick with greasy blood and bits of meat, as was half her face. She walked happily through the dead ogres and their ravaged campsite. A few of the monster hunters reached for their weapons when she passed them.
"Anyone called for me, my dears?"
Yarlin sang. Her belly was bloated like a balloon, and her cheeks had a cozy pink color to them. She belched wetly, and one of Kes's recruits heaved as if trying not to puke. Ed barely passed an endurance test to not follow suit.
"Whoever said that vampires were sexy should have a long chat with Yarlin," he thought.
"Levy's right,"
Kes said, strolling angrily at the vampire.
"You told us the entrance would be protected."
She jabbed the stump of her index finger at Yarlin.
"Did you lead us into a trap, vampire?"
"How in Murmur's name could I have? I'm a minion,"
Yarlin snapped. Then she visibly withheld herself.
"Beg your pardon, Marshal Kessy. It was my mistake. I thought the mercenaries hired by Dungeon Lord Yaraz would honor their contracts until their time ran out. I was obviously wrong about their loyalty."
"Obviously,"
Kes said. But her animosity had run out. She gestured at the rest of Ed's entourage.
"Everyone, take your positions. We don't know if there's any more of those Minotaur droppings waiting in ambush. If anyone's hurt, say so now."
No one was. The group hurried to heed her call, except for one Batlin who was busy looting a dead ogre. His spider dragged him back to the other riders before Kes had time to single him out, however.
"What do you know about them?"
Ed asked Yarlin, pointing at the corpses. For his kill, he'd gotten 10 experience points, but the Batblins and the Kuftar had earned far more than that.
"As you said, ogres,"
Yarlin prattled on, clearly happy to change the subject away from her mistake.
"Natives of the Netherworld, technically a minor form of demon, like imps or drones. The word is, they were created by Regent Volkan, Lord of Strife, to use as disposable shock troops in the Age of Myths. Afterward, they sort of spread around. They're very hard to get rid of, like Batblins. This lot here was a group of young ones. They must have been looking for refuge from a bigger threat and found the watchtower empty. They're not very smart, but they have a primitive understanding of combat. Killing is basically the only thing they're good at."
Ed felt a pang of guilt. Young ogres, hiding from the dangers of the Netherworld, and he'd slain them without a single chance at surrender.
"On the other hand, they did attack first."
His empathy could only extend so far, and although it pained him to admit it, the fact that they were but ugly helped a lot to dehumanize them.
"I see. Anything else?" he asked.
"They're brutes, but breed enough of them and you may get a natural spellcaster once in a while. Otherwise, fatten them up. Get a dozen to gain enough experience points. Have them buy defensive talents, and clad them in the heaviest armor you can find. Natural siege breakers. Have them charge at any structure. Or, well, anything smaller than a city, really. And they'll tear it apart. not particularly useful against heroes, at least in small numbers. Then again, nothing is.
Noted, Ed said. How many do we need to start, to grow them in the haunt? Yarlin shrugged.
I lack expertise in that area, Lord Wraith. Two, perhaps?
I'm sure it doesn't work that way, Ed said, cringing inwardly. Inbreeding probably wouldn't help the poor fuck's looks.
Your orders, Dungeon Lord,
Kes said, using her formal tone.
This is real, Ed thought.
Since he was the one calling the shots, the lives of everyone here were his responsibility.
Wetlands. When did that happen?
Like you said, we don't know if there are more of them, so we secure the place, he told Kes. If there's any remaining ogres, try to capture them instead. Don't risk yourselves for it, though. Kes nodded, then began barking orders.
Monster hunters, you're on trap-finding duty. Good luck. Use the spiderlings to stay in touch. Click, you and Tulip use that echolocation trick of yours and pinpoint anything that moves that isn't us. Spider Guard, you know what to do. Nothing gets near to our Dungeon Lord. Casters, that includes you, Yarlin. We assist the hunters in putting our new ogres to sleep. Haunted Guards, you stay here and protect the portal. If we come back running and screaming for our lives, you have my permission to do the same.
She clapped several times to hurry them.
All right, everyone got it? Then hop to it. Earn those experience points.
Seeing them spring to action and work in unison awoke in Ed something akin to pride. The idea that they hadn't been fighting together as a unit for years was almost unbelievable. It made him proud to be part of the reason they were working together. Batblins, humans, Kuftar, spiders, avian, even a vampire now. They formed the haunt. His haunt. The idea made him so elated that he almost didn't care that every single one of them would be stealing his kills. In the end, there weren't even that many kills to steal. Kleck and Tulip reported only 3 remaining ogres, who were scattered through the watchtower's upper level as sentinels. They'd heard the ruckus below and had been waiting in ambush behind a barreled door. There were other creatures around, critters and beast-like demons, but they'd run away the second Ed's forces got near them. That was disappointing. Monsters were supposed to go toward the adventurers, not away from them. But it made sense, as Ed had to remind himself. After all, he wasn't an adventurer. He was a dungeon lord, and his group was technically a raiding party more than an adventuring group. Hell, they were a few dozen members away from being a warband. Of course, anything with a mind above 5 would run at the sight of them. Ogre. Experience, 200. Brawn, 18. Agility, 10. Spirit, 8. Mind, 4. Charm, 4. Endurance, 16. Skills. Melee. Improved, 5. Survival. Basic, 5. Talents. Armored hide. Magical resistance. Basic. Once the monster hunters cleared the first level of traps, Ed's party set to dealing with the ambush. Since the upper level's floor was built out of wood, Ed had them take position in a ring beneath the ogres above. The spiders drew a huge web net dangling from the ceiling, the Kuftar prepared their sleeping darts, and the rest raised a couple of Levy's runes, just in case. That done, Ed summoned a group of drones and had them collapse a section of the ceiling. Seconds after they began to chomp, came a crack like thunder, and dust and broken wooden boards cascaded down into the webbing below, followed by a short stream of rotten furniture and 3 extremely surprised ogres. The Kuftar shot a volley of darts and, while the ogres struggled against the webbing, the horned spiders skittered around them and bit them over and over with their paralysis-inducing fangs. It took several tricky seconds before the ogres stopped struggling, but even the highest endurance couldn't resist a high enough dosage.
We're way overtrained for this,
Kaga pointed out while a group of horned spiders dragged the webbed, unconscious ogres through the portal a few minutes later.
I was hoping the Netherworld would be a better test of my skills.
Don't you worry, Kuftar,
Yarlin told him.
There is plenty of challenges left for you.
2 males and 1 female,
Levy said, scratching the side of her head.
It's probably not enough to set up a self-sustaining ogre farm.
Ed sent a couple drones along with the captured ogres, with instructions on how to adapt a couple free cells of the Haunt's jail to contain the creatures until he got back.
We'll get more later. These three will help our monster hunters learn how to train them.
He turned to Yarlin.
Do you know how Yaraz secured the minionship of non-intelligent creatures?
There's three ways that I know of, Lord Wraith. First is, you don't bother. Grab a couple monsters like acid oozes and toss them into a chamber you want to defend for cheap. Throw them some rusty iron a few times a month. Then forget about it. Your drones will try to take care of their other necessities on their own if your skills are high enough. Second, you use a mantle spell. Shackle mind, I believe. It works only on beings with a natural mind of 3 or below. Any affected creature won't attack you or yours, but it's an effect a clever adventurer can disrupt. Third way, you can build a special enticement room. Man it with a couple succubi, and they'll happily convince almost anyone to become your minion.
She gave him a cruel grin.
Best thing is, you can find the room design, the succubi, and the spell right here in Zovia. Shall I make the arrangements?
I'm not interested in torture chambers, Ed said, attempting to keep his voice level. But thanks for the information.
Yarlin made a small curtsy to mask the disappointment in her expression. After that, Kleck led the team to the areas where the watchtower's marble walls had fractures and holes that monsters could use to get inside. They hurried to plug those with webbing and stone, which was only a temporary measure, but would hopefully dissuade anything nasty from taking a bite out of the Haunt guards while the others weren't there. Ed noted that his drones had a much harder time working on the white stone than back on Ivalis. The obsidian-like surface of the ground they couldn't manipulate at all. Their bites simply bounced off and did no damage. He filed this discovery in the back of his mind and readied himself to leave the watchtower. Yaraz's mercenaries hadn't bothered to close the entrance after them. The chains lay like dead, rusted snakes in knots among the floor, and the 6-foot-tall doors swung back and forth with the thick, netherworldly wind. Past the entrance came the first view Ed had had of the netherworld since his arrival in Ivalis. The sky was crimson-red and engulfed by angry, coal-black storm clouds, chains of thunder shining through. The air was heavy with dust and buffeted hard against Ed's face, forcing him to raise a hand to protect his eyes. The ground was the same obsidian mixture of stone and crystal, and it extended in jagged breaks and crests as far as the eye could see. It was all sharp edges and smooth surfaces that made it easy to lose one's footing in an instant. The landscape was black with little to no vegetation, but it sloped downward in several parts, as if Ed and the others were standing atop one of the fingers of the hand of some gargantuan titan from the Age of Myths. The slopes extended so far below that Ed couldn't see what was at the end, other than more black clouds like the ones in the sky. For all he knew, the Zovia landmass floated in the middle of more sky, completely disregarding the laws of physics. Or they were walking atop some kind of netherworldly volcano. Both explanations left Ed with a bitter taste in his mouth, alongside the eerie sensation that the world itself was dangerous and could lash out against him at any time.
"Is this some kind of desert?"
Ed asked, searching for the plants and vegetation he was currently cultivating in his underground farms.
"Not at all,"
Yarlin said happily.
"On the contrary, Zovia is considered a very fertile land, highly sought after by other regions."
"Yeah, I can tell," Alder said. "I'm almost drowning in all this greenery."
He swatted away a non-existent branch.
"I think Master Alder is vastly underestimating the true size of the Netherworld,"
Yarlin pointed out.
"There is a reason why portal travel is a must, even with all its difficulties and dangers, instead of more mundane means. In any case, Yaraz did have some clout, even in the end, and our current location is fairly close to the Citadel. About a day's journey, I'd say."
She pointed at a tiny section of the horizon where something like a gray button contrasted against the jagged obsidian world, although it may have been a trick of the light.
"Unless the Regent chooses to give us a lift, that is."
Kleck gave the vampire a sideways glance.
"But no one knows we're here."
Yarlin smiled mischievously and said nothing. It was at about that time Ed realized the ground was trembling. If seen from far above, say, while mounted on a griffin, the beast that emerged from the fracture line closest to the watchtower may have looked like a dotted caterpillar with hundreds of yellow legs allowing it to climb through the obsidian slope and into the ground above, its antenna twitching with an air of perpetual curiosity. Seeing it from the height of a normal human being, like Ed did, was another thing. It was as if someone had mistaken the proportions of a train with that of a house, elongated it a couple dozen times, and then mounted the thing onto an impossible series of yellow hydraulic legs. The antenna were easily the width of his arm and had spiked ends like a pair of morning stars. The head was a wedge of armored chitin the color of rusty steel, dotted with multicolored rings of greens and oranges, and the mouth was a, thank the gods, toothless cavern that opened slightly as if to taste the fresh air.
Cinderpea!
Kaga exclaimed, his voice walking a fine line between amazement and hysterics.
And it's coming right at us!
Several hundred meters separated the giant creature from Ed's party, but it was clear it was headed their way, and it was surprisingly fast for a being of that size. At once, half the group drew runes or bows, and the other half took a couple discreet steps back toward the watchtower. And the portal. Yumiya, Kaga's second, drew her blowpipe, gazed at it, whined, and pocketed it again.
"Stand down, everyone!"
Yarlin said.
"Yovia's regent has sent a welcome fitting for a dungeon lord. The cinderpede is the best way to span the distance to the citadel. You have my word, it's perfectly safe. As long as no one pokes it with his sharp stick, that is."
Levi turned to her, hands crackling with the purple energy of a barely contained spell.
"You knew about this?"
"Why, could it be that the head researcher hasn't ever seen a cinderpede?"
the vampire asked without losing her grin. Ed sighed and carefully used his gauntlet to brush away a pearl of sweat from his forehead. "I should have seen this coming," he chided himself. The advance of the centipede would have been majestic if it hadn't been headed straight their way. He noted idly that even the Batblins had taken a cue from him and Cass and remained relatively calm, not counting the many shuffling quietly toward the watchtower, with Alder among them.
"It's fine," Ed told the witch. "Yarlin only got away with it because she genuinely believes we're not in any danger."
"Danger? I'd never!"
Yarlin exclaimed.
"I'm only doing my job, helping the haunt!"
Kes turned to Ed.
"What's going on?"
she asked him quietly. Ed shook his head. Like in most things, it made sense in retrospect. The way Yarlin had become so helpful once she'd realized Ed wished to head to the Netherworld, the way she'd discreetly convinced them to go to Zovia instead of anywhere else. He faced the vampire and asked her,
"How long have you been working for Korgoron?"
The vampire patted her distended belly and smiled beatifically with that dead face of hers.
"Ah, a lady should never reveal her secrets."
Hours later, while sitting comfortably on an embroidered silk cushion inside Kissdog's tent, Ed could almost forget that he was riding atop a damned giant centipede. Almost. The tent itself was a work of art. It was fashioned out of a warm red and gold fabric with one wooden column sustaining the arches of the ceiling. The carpet hid the chitin of the centipede from view, and if it weren't for the constant, rhythmic movement of its legs, it would have been like riding a luxury train car. His minions rode under conditions only slightly less luxurious. The tents were smaller and more cramped, and lacked the incense and all the silver cutlery Kissdog had lying around. Still, Ed couldn't help but feel vulnerable without Cass, Alder, Kleck, and Levi covering his back. Kissdog himself lay placidly under a stream of cushions in much the same way his master had been when Ed met the regent of Zovia. The Naga flicked his snake tail and used the edge with surprising dexterity to throw a couple more incense sticks to the brazier burning over a golden tray close to him.
We've been waiting for your arrival ever since our dutiful associate informed us you'd grace us with your presence.
He half-purred at Ed. The Naga was dressed in an ample green tunic embroidered in smoky floral patterns, and his chiseled arms were covered in golden brands that marked him as the property of Korgoran herself. He moved and talked with a snobbish affectation, and it was clear he took great pains to avoid prolonging the S's in his speech, and he almost succeeded. Ed gave Yarlin a dubious look. The vampire was half asleep from her feast on ogre blood, with a very satisfied expression on her face.
The Lady of Secrets indeed. Korgoran could have sent an invitation instead of going through all this trouble, you know.
Yarlin chuckled and licked one finger marred with crusted blood.
Lord Wraith, you're the only dungeon lord I've ever met that dislikes gifts.
Nothing is ever free, Ed told her. Although, he had to admit, she had a point.
Yarlin had been a servant of Korgoran long before she'd ever become a minion of Uraz the Elder. Apparently, it was a given that most of a dungeon lord's elite demonic minions came from their relationship with one regent or another. Technically, vampires and Naga weren't demons, but Korgoran was in the business of collecting skilled individuals with juicy bits of knowledge. Having lived as long as she had, Yarlin fit the bill perfectly. When she'd heard about Ed's vision with the regent, the vampire had understood her master's wishes and nudged Ed's path to converge with the regent's. Since Korgoran had no current ill intentions toward the Dungeon Lord, Yarlin's minionship pact had allowed her to act as she had. Yes, technically, Ed had nothing to complain about. In reality, though, the mantle's pacts can be gamed too, he thought. He'd always acted on the assumption that pacts were airtight. Yarlin had easily danced across its limits. Who knew what other ways there were to exploit the rules? Ed had been avoiding other dungeon lords for far too long. There were tricks that he didn't know, and for a while there, he'd come to believe he was the only one around who dared to push objectivity's buttons a bit. From the looks of it, the demon regents of the Netherworld had been at it for thousands of years.
In this case, Kistog said, easing his way back into the conversation, it's as close as it gets. Regent Korgoran has put this cinderpede at your disposal for traveling to the Citadel at your leisure. Her name is Ilma. You'll find that she's not only a regal way to move around, but also a fine way of avoiding the nuisances of travel by foot. The Netherworld can be a dangerous place even for the mightiest Dungeon Lord, if caught unaware.
So I hear, Ed said. And in the meantime, I guess you'll make me an offer too good to pass up, right?
He glanced outside the small window of the tent. The never-ending storm swirled across the vast red sky, and the fractured landscape crested in the distance. He saw the first hint of vegetation then, a huge mushroom-shaped tree growing right at the edge of an obsidian slope, with roots reaching down to the emptiness below. Thanks to Ilma's height, Ed could see that the tree's crown was rich with gray puffballs. The tubers apparently grew inside the tree, with only their gray tops visible, but the violet smoke flowing upward was unmistakable. Tiny red and brown figures buzzed angrily around the puffball farm, wielding farming instruments. Kistog calmly reached for a silver tray with tea utensils and poured out two cups of a steaming, unknown brew. He made no motion to serve Yarlin anything, and she didn't give signs of caring. Ed ignored the cup the Naga set in front of him, but Kistog drank from his own without a care.
It seems I was misinformed, Lord Wraith. Have you had experience with the demon regents after all? You appear to be familiar with their ways.
A relative of Korgoran, maybe, Ed said, thinking of Charon. I'm not sure.
He sighed, and then squared his shoulders.
Enough with the cryptic one-liners, Kistog. If we keep this up, we'll reach the Citadel before saying what we want to say. What does she want? Your master, I mean.
Kistog's cup clinked against the china dish as he set it down with a practiced, fluid motion.
Why, what all regents want with promising dungeon lords? She'd like to offer you a quest, and the chance to be rewarded handsomely if you succeed.
He smiled in a way that befitted his 16 ranks in charm, but the gesture was marred by the Naga's bifurcated tongue flicking the air in a fraction of a second.
No offense, but I've had my hands full with quests at the moment, Ed said. Some days, it looks like I get them faster than I can finish them.
That's the sign of a dungeon lord on the rise. But don't worry, this is not a quest that you need to fulfill right now. Indeed, the next endeavor won't begin until next year.
Endeavor?
Kistog and Yarlin exchanged knowing glances. Yarlin winked at the Naga.
Truly, this must be the first time you've entered the Netherworld if you haven't yet heard about Evangeline Tillman's inheritance, Lord Wraith. Allow me to explain. St. Clair and Tillman was one of the Netherworld's most famous corporations, a joint venture between the famous dungeon lord St. Clair and the renowned witch Evangeline Tillman. Together, they created a juggernaut of industry that pushed the boundary of scientific and magical research. Banking, spellcraft, weaponry, creature design, even farming and etiquette training. St. Clair and Tillman put it all together and packaged it neatly together for the young, enterprising dungeon lord. This was the corporation's claim to fame. For almost 100 years, St. Clair and Tillman single-handedly fueled the Lothian war engine against Haligies, and since they were exclusively located in the Netherworld, there was nothing the militant church could do about it.
Yarlin sighed with nostalgia.
Ah, the good old days. I remember them as if it all happened yesterday. A newly mantled dungeon lord could simply pact with a regent, ask for a small loan, and have St. Clair and Tillman set him up with everything he needed. Spells, designs, weapons, monsters, all but experience points. He'd only need to point at a neighboring city and start the pillaging.
She shook her head, lost in memories.
I won't bore you with a history lesson, Kistog said. Today, St. Clair and Tillman is gone. Evangeline and Lord St. Clair are long dead, and the fabled Board of Advisors is long dismantled. The Standard Factory is but a phantom operation, maintained only by golems and self-sustained security systems, blindly following the last instructions they got decades ago, powered on by ever-dwindling magical reserves. Inside the factory's grounds are hidden treasures beyond measure. But that's irrelevant. The factory itself is the prize, Lord Wraith, and in the hands of a smart dungeon lord, its value soars beyond the treasury of Haligies and Lothia added together. The Standard Factory contains all the magical systems used by St. Clair and Tillman to equip dungeon lords. The assembly lines, the monster customization facilities, the enchanted weaponry stock, even their altered crops are stored there. Imagine what a single dungeon lord could do with it. He'd become as powerful as a regent, almost, with the reach and influence of a king. Think of the possibilities.
The Naga's black tongue slithered up and down in excitement. Ed raised an eyebrow.
All that sounds very nice. What does it have to do with me? I'm not sure how the Netherworld deals with inheritance, but where I come from, fortune is either given to the closest descendants of the owners, or the assets are claimed by the government. I'm pretty sure a random dungeon lord can't just step inside the factory and claim it for himself. Otherwise, someone like Alaric Everbleed would have done it already. Or one of the regents, for that matter.
Yarlin smiled lazily.
If it were only that simple.
Indeed, indeed, Kistog said. Lord Wraith,
all of St. Clair and Tillman's descendants, those singled out in the wills, at least, died under surprising yet totally natural circumstances. These things happen all the time, you see. Terrible, terrible luck.
Ed's eyebrow rose another inch, which Kistog seemingly took as a clue to explain further.
One was terribly depressed. He grabbed a crossbow and shot himself twice in the back of the head. We do not understand how he managed to reload the second time, but it was truly a testament to his commitment. Another one mistook a vitality potion for a deadly acid that had been, due to a terrible miscommunication, labeled the exact same as the potion. Another one accidentally ran a dozen times straight into the knife of an Akathunian ambassador.
I get it, Ed said. No living descendants. Why won't the Regents claim it?
Evangeline and St. Clair were a peculiar pair, Kistog said. A bit paranoid in their later years, one could say. They believed some Regents were jealous of their amassed wealth, so they built the Standard Factory in the heart of Raga, a hotly contested territory with no Regent. If any Regent were to claim the factory for himself, he'd start a war that the Netherworld cannot afford, given the trying times we live in. Furthermore, all the other Regents would ally against him and surely end him, since no Regent is strong enough to fight all others at once.
Not that they haven't tried to sneak their way inside many times,
Yarlin pointed out.
They forge their alliances and go to their secret meetings, but the nature of a demon always betrays them. They simply cannot work together for anything important without backstabbing one another.
Kistog looked away nervously.
That's your opinion, Yarlin, not mine.
He rubbed the bands on his arms.
Lord Wraith, the only way the Regents can access the secrets of St. Clair and Tillman without setting the Netherworld aflame is to follow the rules. That is, to respect the wishes of Evangeline Tillman, as stated in the last point of her will.
He took a deep breath and quoted,
In the event that all my living descendants would succumb to untimely deaths under mysterious circumstances, all my properties and holdings are to go to the first dungeon lord to come in possession of the Standard Factory's Bill of Ownership, which is located in my office's desk. Good luck.
Ed blinked. Really? But that only makes dungeon lords kill one another instead of regents, he said.
That was the point, I think, Kistog said. Tillman was a famous sponsor of the lordship, but she was an idealist. She dreamt of a world where dungeon lords and regents could set their differences aside and work together for the common good of the dark, and what really matters, the extermination of the light and all its followers. A nice sentiment, but also impossible. Like Yarlin here has said, nature has a way of asserting itself.
Ed shook his head in disbelief. He'd been in the Netherworld for only a couple hours and was already overwhelmed with the sheer moral dissonance that their inhabitants spouted with no visible self-awareness.
It's as if they're trying to be as evil as possible on purpose, he mused.
He wished Alder was here. The bard always acted as if his head was in the clouds, but his insight into human nature went beyond Ed's. Perhaps he could make sense of this mummer's farce. Although, and he hated to admit it to his very core, the idea of the Standard Factory had him tempted. At the very least, he was willing to hear the rest of what Kistog had to say.
Go on, he told the Naga.
The Endeavor is Tillman's post-mortem attempt at achieving her dream, a yearly contest to which all dungeon lords may attend. They and a small selection of minions enter the grounds of the Standard Factory and try to reach Tillman's office. We suppose her plan was to force dungeon lords to work together and reach an arrangement and share the factory among themselves. So far, everyone has either retreated
or succumbed to the factory's defenses, or been backstabbed by their peers. Word on the street is, we need a winner. We cannot afford to lose dungeon lords to one another as well as the heroes. It's unsustainable. So Regent Corgron has magnanimously taken matters into her own hands and helped a worthy dungeon lord win the contest. One pure of heart, brave, and with no ties to the netherworld to corrupt him, so he may achieve Tillman's dream.
Oh, go fuck yourself, Ed said quietly.
Kistog's tongue flickered in disbelief. I beg your pardon, Lord Wraith?
Do you think I'm a dreamy farm boy who wants to avenge his father? You were doing so well until you tried to take me for an idiot, Ed said.
Next to him, Yarlin looked as if she were barely containing a fit of laughter.
Tell me what Corgron really wants.
Your evilness. I assure you, everything I said is the utmost truth. Kistog was the very image of an affronted snake man. His tail tensed with hurt pride, as if the very idea that Ed thought him dishonest wounded him to the core. Ed could feel the anger bubbling through his veins. He could stand someone lying to him, but if there was something that made him lose his temper in a second, it was people treating him like an idiot.
Either you tell me what she really wants, or you can walk the rest of the way on foot to explain to her why you failed to recruit me. His words hung in the air like a sword for a second.
Kistog rose slightly from the cushions, his mouth partially open to reveal a pair of fangs dripping oily poison.
Would you threaten to throw me out of my own centipede, Lord Wraith?
At this point in his life, Ed had been threatened by creatures so powerful and terrifying that the sight of the angry Naga was like seeing a child throwing a tantrum. He leaned back on the cushions to relieve the weight of his armor and spread his arms without a care in the world.
It's my centipede, Kistog. And no, I wouldn't throw you out of Ilma. My vampire would, he said.
The Naga's brow contorted with fury. He opened his mouth, then closed it and stared blankly at Yarlin, who was smiling broadly from ear to ear.
Sorry, Kissy, she said. Minion duty. No hard feelings, right, dear?
Ed could almost see the gears turning in Kistog's mind. The Naga sat down.
Smart, Kissy,
Yarlin said.
The truth,
Kistog said sourly.
Every regent wants a piece of the pie. Since that bitch Tillman left no way for the regents to claim the factory without starting a war, they have lowered themselves to working through dungeon lords. Every single man and woman with a mantle beating inside their chest that steps into the netherworld gets an offer. Regent Corgron got a small group of dungeon lords to work together, and by that, I mean they hopefully won't attack each other as soon as they meet. She wants you on her side. The rule is, the team reaches Tillman's office, and then they sort out who gets what. The regent doesn't care about the specifics, so long as one of her team gets the bill of ownership.
Now that's better.
With the cards on the table, Ed could tell that Corgron's offer was even more dangerous than it looked at first glance. If every other regent was pulling their weight and forcing the dungeon lords under their influence to work together, allying with one regent over another could earn the anger of other dungeon lords well before the endeavor began.
I've somehow stumbled headfirst into a faction quest line, Ed thought, scratching his chin.
In an RPG, a faction quest line made you choose between different opposing groups to advance the story. Completing quests for one group increased your status and standing in that faction, but increasing it too much usually angered the other factions and made you lose out on their quests and rewards. Ed wasn't a fan of those types of quests because he hated going in blindly, knowing that no matter what he did, he'd miss out on content and items. Ivalice Online lacked that kind of game mechanic.
It was a good old murder fest, simple and to the point. Obviously, real life wasn't as charming.
Thanks for being clear, Ed told the Naga. There's only one more thing. Why would Corgoron bother? I assume she wants a bite out of St. Clair and Tillman's property.
Kistog grimaced and twirled a lock of greenish hair.
It would be of little use to you, he said. The Lady Regent wants Tillman's spellbooks, logs, and patents. The knowledge locked away in the Standard Factory's vaults interests her greatly. The factory itself is of no use to her.
He frowned and raised a warning finger at Ed.
And don't try to cheat her. You'll find that Regent Corgoron can be quite reasonable, but she's also happy to kill a dungeon lord that stands in the way of her curiosity.
Noted, Ed said.
It was as fair a deal as he could expect. The Naga had vastly understated the value of Tillman's intellectual property, probably on purpose. But Ed's many jobs before coming to Ivalis had taught him that information was much more valuable than plain old hardware. It was very possible that Tillman's intellectual property was worth many times more than the Standard Factory. And yet...
I'll consider it, Ed told Kistog, but not today. Like I told you before, my hands are full.
Of course, Lord Wraith.
Now the Naga relaxed his shoulders and smiled.
Regent Corgoron understands that you'll need time to deal with your business in Ivalis. She only asks that you give her preference when you're approached by other regents.
Actually,
Ed said, grinning like a ranger watching a rabbit nibble on the bait of his trap. I'd be happy to give her offer priority. But there are a couple things another regent may offer that could...
What would Alder say in my place? Persuade me to evaluate their offer.
He was absolutely sure that he and Kistog had entered some kind of charm contest. Ed hoped that his 14 ranks would be enough. The Naga had 14 as well, though, given that he was the Netherworld's equivalent of a recruiter.
Is that so? And what would those things be?
Kistog asked slowly. Ed took a deep breath.
Here goes nothing. I want to free my dungeon from the danger of heroic invasion once and for all, and I need access to all the resources I can get. Gear, spells, manpower, even disposable monsters to throw around. I'm doing a bit of research as well on the whereabouts of a dungeon lady named Golsa. If she's still alive, she and I are due for a long chat. Finally, I'd like to know if Corgoron has heard of a person from a world called Earth having been summoned to fight for the Light. Probably not long before the first heroes started showing up.
Only a year as a dungeon lord and already making a ruckus,
Kistog muttered, more to himself than to Ed.
I wonder how long it'll be before you bite off more than you can chew, Lord Wraith.
He waved his hand at Yarlan, who had bent forward in a way that was at the same time both perfectly innocent and utterly threatening.
Never mind that. Regent Corgoron has allowed you to pretty much roam freely around the Citadel. You'll have access to our vendors and specialists, although securing their loyalties is up to you. She's even willing to grant you a line of credit as long as you use it wisely. On the second and third demands... That's a bit more difficult. I've never heard about Earth before, but nevertheless, I'm only the lady's servant. I'll mention it to her, but I can already predict that she'll demand a bit more of a reason to trust you with her secrets on the matter of Lady Golsa. Perhaps the Lady of Secrets knows about Lady Golsa's fate. Perhaps she'll need to cash in a few favors. It'll be much easier if she's in the right mood. If you catch my meaning.
I do, Ed said.
It was the faction questline all over again. To get the information he wanted, he'd have to increase his standing with Corgoron's faction. Perhaps he ought to get it over with and make it into an official quest for the haunt.
At least we're making progress, he told himself. Not bad for our first foray into the Netherworld.
He had only had to informally ally himself with one of Charon's siblings and, perhaps, earn the animosity of who knew how many others, including potentially the boatman himself. And he knew very well that Kistog hadn't shared all of Corgoron's plans. By now, he'd had enough dealings with the Dark to know it never revealed its true intentions until it was too late. But it was nice to have a regent from the Netherworld try to manipulate him into doing her bidding instead of having to deal with the envoy of Murmur himself. It was a refreshing change of pace, and since he had absolutely no intentions of playing by Corgoron's rules at all, he decided he couldn't hold it against her either. "I'll consider your offer, and in the meantime, I accept your master's gifts in the name of the Haunt." Ed stood up, his armor clinking as he did, and Yarlin hurried to follow suit. Kistog's triumphant smile faltered.
"Where are you going, Lord Wraith? We haven't arrived at the Citadel yet. Please sit down. Let's celebrate the beginning of a beautiful friendship."
"We're not friends, Naga. My friends are back there," he said, pointing back over his shoulder, "and I mean to join them. Thanks for the tea."
He was almost to the tent's door when he heard the shuffling of the rugs as the Naga slithered his way.
"Wait, Lord Wraith," Kistog called. "Just one last thing. My master told me to give you this. She said you'd know why."
The Naga handed him a sturdy card with a metallic edge and a familiar scene playing out on its face, with three men working at the keyboards of a control room.
"The Shadow Tarot is going to be missing a card if I keep this," Ed pointed out.
"It wouldn't be an artifact of power if it couldn't replace a lost card," was all Kistog said.
Ed glanced at the card again, and all it implied. A part of him wanted to throw it back in Kistog's face and have Yarlin make good on Ed's defenestration threat. But it was as if the three men in the image were looking straight at him, smiling, hopeful, confident. Ed sighed and pocketed the card as he left.
Chapter 20. Netherworld. A stream of imps flew well above Ed's head, over the high stone rooftops and the sharp walls of Zovia Citadel, and into the spiral beehive that was the Regent's Palace, which rose well past any other building in its surroundings, and almost challenged the skyscrapers on Earth.
"All right, everyone, we're here,"
Ed told his minions, who fanned out in a half-circle in front of him and forced the crowd to part in their wake. A couple minotaurs gave them angry glances, which Kes returned 100-fold, but no one dared mess with a dungeon lord and his minions, which was a welcome change of pace, and more so because some of the Netherworld's inhabitants seemed like the kind of beings you wouldn't want to meet in a dark alley at the end of the night. Or a well-lit alley in the middle of the night. Or a perfectly open street in the middle of the day.
"Let's make the best of it."
"What's the plan, Lord Ed?"
Kleck asked. He and his spider riders surrounded the couple of small coffers full of Vifaras that Ed had brought from the Haunt. Hopefully, with Corgoron's line of credit backing them up, they wouldn't need to spend much from their own funds. The Citadel itself spit in the face of anything resembling reasonable laws of physics. It rose above the fractured landscape beneath it, growing around the palace like bulbs extending from a sturdy plant stem. The Citadel walls were more like a partial cocoon protecting it from aerial incursion, with massive orange runes enveloping the city in an invisible aura meant to stop most magical means of invasion, as well as divination. To reach the market bulbs sector, Ed's group had had to climb through the bottom of Corgoron's palace first, which seemed to mostly consist of gigantic staircases, and then through the main bridge. It was a small miracle he had lost no one along the way.
"We've figured out quite a bit regarding the heroes in the last few months," Ed said. "We've seen them in action, watched how the Inquisition uses them, and learned their history. I think it's time we investigate how they work. Closely. I mean for us to capture one."
That simple statement earned him a couple of incredulous stares.
"You do remember that they explode in your face if you try to imprison them, right?"
Lady whispered to him.
"That's why it's so important," Ed explained. No one has done it because the Inquisition has gone to great pains to make their capture impossible. But we know things that no Ivalian native does.
You mean that the hero's creator came from your world?
Alder said.
At least, that's what you think.
Ed's eyes flicked left and right, past the crowd of inhuman inhabitants and sellers. He and his minions stood in the middle of the street of one of the Citadel's market bulbs. The thick bridge that connected it to the bottom of Corgron's palace grew like a stone tongue out in the horizon. Several lesser bridges connected the bulb with its neighbors, and the shade of its wall covered the street in a partial twilight only broken by the fragile light coming from hundreds of paper lamps eerily floating several feet above the ground, following some kind of mystical current flowing all through the city, giving the impression that the sky was enveloped by dancing red stars.
It's true, Ed said. He could almost feel the weight of the Shadow Tarot's card hidden inside his pocket. And until he or she shows up, there are a few things I want to try. And I'm going to need everyone's help.
The stares turned into excited whispering.
What do you need us to do, Lord Ed?
Kleck asked. Ed grinned.
Well, to start, we're going to build an enticing fake dungeon, one that the Inquisition won't be able to resist sending its heroes against.
He paced in front of his minions as he pointed at each different group.
Yarlin, you know people here, don't you? I want you to recruit me some minions. Find me the worst of the worst, people that no one will miss, but those who are dumb enough to take a dangerous mission.
You want disposable minions?
Yarlin said, sounding bored.
It's nothing out of the ordinary. Shouldn't be a problem.
Kaga, Ed went on, you and your monster hunters will find the biggest, meanest monsters we can keep under control. No need to set up breeding camps for each type, but if the price is good, remember that we're on Corgoron's tab, so don't worry about running up the numbers.
We'll find creatures that put the fear of the haunt into the heart of our enemies,
Kaga said with a salute.
And go with Yarlin when you've got a bit of free time. I haven't forgotten about my promise. I owe you a martial artist mentor, and it's about time we square that debt. Take one gold chest with you, and if you happen to meet someone that grabs your interest, feel free to bribe him into coming back with us.
The monster hunters cackled excitedly as Yumiya grabbed a coffer.
Next, Levy.
Ed stepped in front of the witch.
Go on a spell shopping spree. Be responsible, though.
Oh, yes, finally.
The glint in Levy's eyes was the same as those of a kid whose parents told him there'd be Christmas every week that year.
Come back with a diviner, though, he advised her, as well as someone who knows how to work enchantments into traps. I've got a couple ideas for your dish design and our scrambling towers. It's pretty important.
Got it. Spend our fortune on spell books, hire a diviner, and an enchanter.
She rubbed her hands together.
Can I leave already?
Ed nodded, then continued on, stopping in front of Kleck.
Kleck, you and your spider riders will find us some trap makers. The Thieves Guild's already helping us with normal trap making, so we want to get someone that specializes in magical traps. I don't know how to explain the kind of trap I'm looking for, so here's my best description. It has many small, interchangeable parts that the creator can swap in and out. The idea is to get the trap maker to teach us how to integrate magical traps into the normal workings of the haunt, if that makes any sense.
Kleck scratched his hairy chin.
We won't fail you, Lord Ed.
Bat Glens are excellent at laying traps. Good choice using us for this important mission, Lord Wraith,
Tulip said. Ed nodded, then headed for Kes and Alder, who were waiting patiently for him.
The three of us will head into the nearest inn and crunch some numbers. Kes will deal with strategy, Alder will tackle psychology, and then the three of us will put it together. Also, I could use a drink.
He admitted.
Actually, everyone's free to join us when you're done with your tasks. Drinks are on the regent.
That earned him a few complicit laughs and a bout of clapping from Yumiya. Ed took a deep breath. Behind his helmet, sweat turned his hair slick and glued it to his forehead. The Netherworld was boiling hot.
Okay, everyone. Let's get to it.
His minions spread through the bazaar, mixing with the local demonic population. As soon as she found herself alone, the first thing Yarlin did was to head straight for the Citadel's prisons and kill a man. She bribed the guards to look the other way and disable the magical defenses for 10 minutes while she misted her way through the door slit of a prisoner's cell. The prisoner had once been a favored minstrel in Corgoron's court, but had fallen out of favor when caught stealing a silver chandelier inside his jacket. Despite the weeks of imprisonment, the minstrel still looked somewhat healthy under the layer of grime and dried shit. It wasn't kindness on the guard's part. On the contrary, a man lasted longer under torture if they kept his endurance up. So she was doing him a favor, actually. But the minstrel didn't bother thinking.